So if this is your second Sunday here, great. Me too. You came back. That's awesome. I need to ask you to go somewhere with me, and this might be really easy for some and a bit of a kind of a step for others, and so work with me, please, because, you know, one of the things that we find a lot in scriptures is the use of metaphorical language, and metaphor means that we have to have some sort of common point of reference to kind of make sense of it, right? So, what I would like for you to do is to remember those experiences that you've had in running. Now, for some of you, that might have been this morning, and for some of you, that might have been several mornings ago. Just say that. For me, it was a long time. In fact, the last time I stepped onto a track, it was in celebration of my daughter's victory as the second fastest fifth grader in Newport News, Virginia. Oh man, she just tore off. And my son has been a runner as well. Our middle daughter said, "That's nice, just keep going, okay?" But, and me too. I'm like, and now Gina is a runner. Gina ran in high school and just loved it, and still kind of that sort of in her bones. But for me, you know, I ran a little bit, but mostly because I was in trouble. Okay, so there is within us a body memory, a muscle memory, right, of moving in that way. And so when you get onto the track, I don't know if you remember well getting onto a track. Now, my son was a cross-country runner, and so he would say, "Track, smack, who needs that? I'll go anywhere I can run." But others, you know, run in a track, in a stadium with bleachers around. And so my last time I stepped onto the track, I could feel that kind of track energy. Some of you might know what I'm saying. It's like, oh, well, this is where it happens, and it's flat, and you know that there's something going on there. And so you think, like, oh, I need to be prepared for this. I need to have the right equipment going on. So I brought my shoes. These are trail running shoes, but they'll do just fine for what we're talking about. This is the Mr. Rogers moment. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Won't you be mine? I am so glad you know this song. Who can sing the rest? Oh, okay. We have somebody? All right, now Sharon's taking pictures of me putting my shoes on. Which is kind of cool because at some point, I won't be able to do that. And so it'll be nice to have evidence to show. If I, it's okay. If I had a sweater to put on, it would seem a bit inappropriate, but I think you get what I'm saying. Now, when I am on the track and have my shoes on, it feels a little, you know, kind of like I could do this, right? Sometimes you have to kind of like get yourself together and get yourself moving so that you can actually do this. Let me put these away. I'll put them in the closet with Mr. Rogers' sweater. Oh, you'd always have a tie on, you know? That was always the cool thing. In the passage that we just heard so beautifully read, thank you so much, there is a memory of people that have run the race, who have gone on before us, who have done the work. And it starts with, you know, very much in the Old Testament. The book of Hebrews is written to tap into that understanding of who people that are Christians came from as people that have a lineage in the Old Testament. And so we hear about Abraham, and we hear about sons and generations. We skipped over some of that. But it was all kind of a way for the writer of Hebrews to say, remember, people have gone on before you. People have been moving in this journey, on this race, for quite some time. Remember them. And then he says, now just imagine, basically, you're on the track. It's your turn. It's the job of people who are followers of Jesus, that pioneer and perfecter, right, of where we're going. It's the job for us to run. Now, think carefully about what you just heard, because we're supposed to run with perseverance or endurance. It depends on the translation, but it's not a sprint, right? In high school, we had a thing called the shuttle run. Can we all groan together, those of who... Oh, yeah. So the shuttle run was this beautiful experience where you had a mark on the ground, and they usually put an eraser, right? An eraser onto the ground, and you were supposed to run to that mark with the eraser and then run back. And you're supposed to do that about 500 times or something like that. I think I'm exaggerating that memory a little bit, but it was, you know, it was that. And it was a sprint, right? It was how fast can you do that? And if you were able to do that in a certain amount of time, you know, you were judged to be physically fit, as about 1% of the population was judged, according to my experience. Anyway, there was this this run that, and it just wore you out, right? I was spent for the rest of the day. I was sleeping in biology class after that because I ran that stupid shuttle run. Nobody's talking about pacing yourself. And no one's kind of talking about how to kind of keep running. Now, there was another run that you ran around the field behind the school about 700-800 times or something like that. But that was more of a race. Because there were some people that were sprinters that were just right out of the gate, and then you pass them. The kind of work that we are invited to do, that the writer of Hebrews is inviting us to, is the endurance race. One where we have to keep going. And in fact, what he says is, run with endurance, run with patience the race that is set in front of you, and let go of the baggage of the sin and the mess that you carry around with you. Everyone likes to carry a backpack full of stuff when they're running, right? I'm looking at my Marine right now going, yeah, man. No. And in fact, and I've hiked a fair amount. That's my sport. I'm a walker. So I've hiked a lot, and the thing that I learned from my earlier days hiking and moving into a more mature phase when I'm smarter about it is you don't need a lot of that stuff that you're hauling around with you, even on day hikes. You might need some of it, others you might not, and the more you can shed, right, it's almost like a sport within itself is how low can I get the weight of my pack. So get rid of the stuff. There is stuff that we carry around with us as we're trying to run and try to move through our life, right? But we're still carrying that around with us. That argument that you've been having with your son for the last 15 years. That difficulty that you have at work. Those people who will not recognize you, even though you're working so hard. Those things that come to you in the middle of the night and whisper that you're a failure and a fraud. All those things. That's weight that we're carrying with us in this journey. The beautiful thing is that you can do something about that. Now, I have a quick and easy plan for that where you can end it out in 15 minutes or less, right? The book is for sale out in the, I'm kidding. Some of you are like, ooh. I should have just made the book available, you know, and you wouldn't see me next week because I would be so wealthy. But I know someone who can help. And the power of that is the one who has gone on before us says, this is how to run, this is how to perfect. Hear the word? This is how to perfect this work. And let me help you. Let me help you drop this and move. Oh, it's good stuff. But you have to keep doing it. And the point of the writer is that all these people have gone on in front of you, and if they can do it, you can do it too, right? If they can do it and demonstrate faith, demonstrate the power of believing that this is possible, the hope that this is doable with Christ, not on your own. Don't do this on your own. It'll hurt. But with Christ, this is possible. All things are possible, including dealing with that thing that you carry. Now, there are some other lessons in the midst of this. There's other parts of the metaphor. By the way, is anybody tired at this point? When I start talking about running, I start to get like, I'm a little glisteny up here right now. Sometimes you have to, in races, make sure that your the technical skills are right, and that you're doing the things that are needed in the circumstance of it. So pacing yourself is one of the things you learn. When my kids were learning to be track and field people, they all went through drills about how to pass the baton. Maybe you have seen this. There's a relay race, and a lot of times, and there'll be a small metal kind of tube that they will pass to each other, and it is a remembrance of ancient times when there would have been a message about a battle or a message about something that needed to be carried forward, and that baton would have, you know, something written in it, and then there would be the handoff for that. Now, the handoff turned out to be an extraordinarily difficult thing to learn, because you know, you're having to kind of match speed, you're having to reach backwards and wait for someone to give you something, and you really have no clear view of them. You could maybe look over your shoulder, but you got a good shot at running into somebody else or falling. So you have to match yourself up to, and the person that is handing off has to get into that place too. And if you don't do it well, if you fumble the handoff, it makes a mess of things. In fact, this is the kind of metaphor that is used oftentimes for pastors that are moving into new parishes, right? Or people that are moving into a leadership position that was occupied by somebody before, or people that are picking up from the fifth grade going into the sixth grade. Oh, those sixth graders. Ah. Right? So that is a very important thing to learn, to not fumble. And we're in a particular moment together in our life because there is a handoff that is going on. I was asked, you know, about where I was thinking things would go and how things would move forward. I've been asked that a few times. And I will be honest with you, part of the thing that I am learning and know about this is that I don't know enough. I have to tell you that I know some things. I know Methodist polity. I know Wesleyan theology pretty well. I know how to kind of sit and be with people. But some of the dynamics of the church, some of the history of your community, all those kinds of things, I'm still I'm the low guy. I'm the new kid. And we have this business of learning each other and learning how to live well with each other. So thank you for your patience up to this point and moving forward. I can tell you, I don't have all the answers, although my wife would disagree and my kids would say, you think you do, right? But I know someone who does. And as long as we're traveling, following him, we have a long, long journey in front of us. Now, the other thing that I've learned through all this is that sometimes you have to run your own race. That's what my son would say coming back from a cross-country match, is like, coach said, run your own race, which means that he is really good at some things and has to struggle with other things. And if he was trying to run like the person beside him, who may have a different kind of set of abilities or talents or whatever runners do, you know, it messes things up. So if you know that hill is going to be a problem, but that vale, that valley in front of you, is where you can pick up speed, run your own race. Does that make sense? I mean, stay in your own lane. Does that make sense? Because some of you are gifted by God to be a particular kind of Christian. That's not a better Christian or a worse Christian, but there are times that you have been given spiritual gifts to kind of pick up and use and, you know, work for the kingdom of God, right? And then other things, you need to kind of like, okay, I'm not particularly good at that, all right? Some people are excellent with finances, all right? And then some people should not be given a checkbook. You have to pass a license test at the bank to be given a checkbook. You know what I mean? Is one more valuable than the other? No. Because the person who might not necessarily have those skills might be the best Sunday school teacher you ever saw. Or able to kind of sit with someone and love them well. I'm saying that, but then I'm going to undo that by, did you see just this last week, there was a shot putter, a hammer thrower from Belgium. Does anybody know this story? Some of you are like, what are you talking about? So there's an international competition. The Belgium team was about to be disqualified because their hurdle jumper, who are amazing people, their hurdle jumper was injured, and they were in the throes of being disqualified from the international competition. When suddenly, from the back, the shot putter. Now, remember, shot putters are people that are powerful, and they're meant and built to be powerful people and not meant to jump over little fences. In fact, if you've ever seen those fences, they're not little fences, you know. Shot putters, it's like ice dancing with a chainsaw. I'm not doing that. But here she is in the back saying, I'll do it. And so she lines up this very powerful, amazing woman. Her name is Yolene Bukombo. I messed that up, I'm sure, but it was a good and noble effort. And she was lined up with all the other 100-meter hurdlers ready to go. And when the gun went off, off she goes, and she demonstrated the slowest, most careful jumps that were ever seen. She holds the world's record for the slowest completion time I mean, she just, and she's an athlete. She's got to protect the rest of her athletic abilities, right? So it's not like she was lazy. She was just doing the best she could, and she finished it. Sometimes we're going to be asked to run a race that we're not so good at. I'm sorry for the grammar, but I think you understand. Boy, we've got. And then the other thing is that there's a crowd. There's a crowd that is in the stands and they're cheering us on. Some of them have popcorn in their hands or sitting there with their Diet Cokes or whatever. Some of them are very just faces in a crowd. But if you look carefully, in fact, you can see them to the left and the right because we're right here running, but there were people that were part of this building. There were people that were with you in the former churches. There have been people with us as we have gone and taken the next step, picked it up and put it down. Picked it up and put it down, and they were cheering you on. When I look up, I see my grandmother who is sitting right there. Her name is Alberta. She was a small woman, and she always had a hoe in her hand. That was to kill the snakes, by the way. But there is Alberta, and she is cheering me on. You know, when I'm named after her. Some of y'all have asked, what do I want to be called? We'll talk about that in a second. But my proper name is Bert. Bert. I'm not Albert. I'm not anything else. I'm Bert. But I was named after my grandmother, who they called Bert. Alberta. Okay. Now, some of you have asked, what do I want to be called? I have tried for years to have people refer to me as Your Holiness. Maybe that will take here. And when that didn't work, I tried Your Eminence, and that didn't go anywhere. That actually performed more poorly. So we'll try Bert. Okay. Some of you might find it helpful to call me Pastor Bert, and if that is the case, I totally understand and embrace that. I will answer to both of those just fine. So please feel free to call me Bert or Pastor Bert. Holiness or eminence would be fine too, but I understand there's a kind of a burden with that. So anyway, there is Bert there going, keep running, Bert. My over here to the left is Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who was one of my teachers at a seminary in Atlanta, and he taught me such incredible things. You know, he's a really kind of diminutive person. He kind of had the features of Yoda in some ways, but Archbishop Tutu could fill up a room. And he is there saying, keep going, Bert. My mother and father are seated right next to Bert. They died a couple of years ago. And right there they are. My dad was a frustrated preacher. He was also my primary school principal. My mom was an English teacher and was ashamed of the way that I butcher the language. But they loved me and encouraged me and got me to this place. They kept me alive. They kept me going. Robert Sanders is sitting right back there. Robert Sanders died in 2012. He was my seventh grade Sunday school teacher. There is a special place in heaven for seventh grade Sunday school teachers. I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up. This is a verified fact. They get an upgrade. All right, and it's a beautiful thing. And he sat with a bunch of seventh grade boys who had nothing in mind but sports and girls and goofy things in between, all right? And he sat with us and he taught us how to listen and to be patient and to love somebody even when they were kind of indifferent to what was happening. That man, if anyone taught me how to love with determination, it was Robert Sanders. I'm personally surrounded by this whole group. And what I want to invite you to do is to look around. Because you will see the big names, of course, Philip, James, John, Paul. You'll see John Wesley there on the walls. You'll see lots and lots of souls that you expect to maybe see. But there's that aunt who took you to church. There's your grandmother. There's your father. There is that school teacher or that Sunday school teacher who believed in you when you were a little kid and did not believe in yourself. They're there. And what are they saying? Keep going. People will look to see you. There are people that are living that are in that stand with us now. I see David Canada, my best friend, right there. Come on, Bert, keep going. And you have people that are giving you that same effort and that same love. We have a journey in front of us. Let's do this well. And I say all this to you in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.